welcome everybody. This is really an exciting evening for many reasons, and you're about to see why. My name is Ruben. I am part of the Cultural Arts and Education Department here at the Center, and my entire staff team, not my team, the team I work with, have been working tirelessly for months putting this weekend's events together, along with people in our legal department and in other departments who have all contributed, and we believe that this is going to be the best Trans Pride ever. But before we do that, I have the honor of making an announcement. I'm announcing a new program. I have been working here for 12 years. I run the adult education programs and the social networking group programs. And one of the groups that I manage and oversee is a group called Transgender Perceptions, if anybody's heard of it. If you haven't attended Transgender Perceptions, it's amazing. We had more than 50 people a couple weeks ago. It's huge, and every person who attends that group is gorgeous, is beautiful, is perfect, is amazing. I'm a cisgender gay man, and you're probably wondering why I'm up here, because this is your day. I'm up here because the program that I'm introducing tonight is a program that I started dreaming about years ago as a result of facilitating Transgender Perceptions, getting to meet many of you, and falling in love with many of you, and you've touched my heart, you've opened my eyes, and so this program, on a personal level, is my way of saying thank you. So I won't go into the details. We made a little video to show you this new program that is starting tonight. Let's show the video.
I'm Maya, and I'm a postoperative transsexual woman.
My name is Skylar, and I identify as a trans man.
My name is Rain, and I identify as a trans woman.
My name is Orion, and I identify as genderqueer.
Hello, my name is Lee, and I am a woman of transgender experience.
My name is Catherine. I am a trans woman.
My name is Cody, and I identify as male.
I'm Leah. I identify as female.
Coming out as trans was tough.
My coming out process was confusing and alienating.
Coming out as trans was lonely. Being my authentic self was difficult because there weren't any resources.
Coming out as trans has been amazing.
Yeah. I wish there was an easier way to meet trans people.
I wish that there could have been somebody who could help me with makeup. My friends tried, but I need more.
I wish I had the opportunity to get medical information about transition from doctors.
We can help you with that.
I wish I had somebody to teach me about my body image and that it was okay to be trans.
I wish I could meet other trans men who are at different stages of their transition.
That's easy. We can totally do that.
I wish there was an easier way to learn about hormones.
We can help you with that.
I wish I had someone to help me learn how to educate others about my identity.
We can help you with that, too. Transitioning requires a sense of humor, and I wish I'd had someone to remind me of that.
I wish I could take a class for meditation and yoga.
Done and done.
Namaste. Hey, girl. Hey.
I wish I had somebody to teach me about finding.
I wish I knew how to go ball gracefully.
I wish that there were more women to go shopping with, trans or cis. It would be great help.
I wish I knew how to dress for my body type.
I wish the center could provide more things like this.
That's a great idea.
Done. You bet.
We can do all of that.
The Los Angeles LGBT Center is proud to introduce the Trans Lounge. The super needs of the transgender community like anything that has ever existed before. Becoming a member of the Trans Lounge is free. And to sign up, all you have to do is log on to translounge.org. Once you become a member, check out our program library filled with many different types of workshops, labs, groups, and events. All you need to do is rate each program based on your level of interest. Once members have voted, we'll schedule those programs that you've told us you wanted most. We'll even let you know how to RSVP for the programs you voted for before everyone else. We will also organize lots of fun social mixers all around town and other special gatherings that will allow you to get out, meet new people, and grow your community. And every few weeks, we'll announce new programs based on your requests. It's the Transgender Education, Empowerment, and Social Program that every trans person has always wished for. Trans Lounge is here to make your wishes come true.
I look forward to the results that people will get from going through this program.
I think that's great. It's something I would really, really be interested in doing.
A lot.
I think that this is an amazing program and an amazing idea. Bravo, let's do it.
Are you going to offer underwater trans basket weaving?
Are you okay?
Yeah.
This is just really exciting for me. I know I've been living with the idea and the dream of seeing this program come true for at least 4 or 5 years. And this is Gina Bigham, who everybody knows. I will be administrating Trans Lounge. Gina will be curating the Trans Lounge. We have, the website is up. You can join tonight. We're going to have computers outside for anyone who wants to join tonight, and we're going to have a booth tomorrow from noon to 6. So we hope you'll come by, you'll sign up, you'll join Trans Lounge. And unlike other programs, this one's a little different because we want you to go and see all the classes that we offer, and we want you to tell us which ones you want to attend. And we're not going to schedule anything until you tell us that that's what you want, because we have some amazing instructors and we want all their classes to be sold out and full and packed so that you all get a great class, you all meet a bunch of other trans people who are looking for education and empowerment, and it's gonna be fucking hot. So I do wanna put a call out. We have about 12 workshops up. We have about 3 labs. We have 3 new groups, a coming out group, a coming out to yourself, a coming out to others, and a group for trans people with HIV. We are looking for instructors, and we're looking for people who want to be group facilitators. We see at least one hand here. Come to me tonight, tomorrow. Come to Gina. Let us know that you're interested, because we not only want to be of service to the trans community, but we want your help to do that genuinely and honestly. So that's the Trans Lounge. I hope everyone will join, and it's going to be awesome. So I'm going to pass it on to Gina, and she is going to start our evening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Trans Pride 2015. Shout-outs before we get going. First, to Ruben Romo, who I've had the pleasure of working with for over a year and a half now. I've known him for about 3 years. There's really no truer ally to our community than Ruben. He's an amazing person. And as he said, this program is kind of his love note to all of us. And I couldn't be prouder to be a part of this program. So can we have a little round of applause for you? So let's get started. First off, a couple of things. We are very pleased to announce that Trans Pride this year is being sponsored by Amazon Prime. We are so thankful. And the show Transparent, we thank you so much for the amazing generosity and being a part of this wonderful event. It's going to be fabulous. They will be here tomorrow for an open casting call for extras for season 3 of Transparent. Now, don't forget tomorrow. Tonight is the kickoff event, our big queer convo. Tomorrow will be our festival. We'll open the doors at noon. We'll have over
35 organizations are going to be tabling. So we'll have a resource fair going on. We've got food, we've got drinks, we've got dancing, we've got everything. We're going to have a catered dinner for 400 of our closest friends, so we want you to be around for that. And basically, just spend the whole day. It's a day of celebration, because we deserve it, and our time has come. Speaking of time, I think it's time for us to have an amazing conversation. I'm going to proudly introduce someone who means the world to me. I was thinking about how is the best way to make this introduction. There's not much left to be said about this amazing person, so I thought, you know, everybody needs, in our community, all over, everyone needs, no, deserves to have, you know, that really cool aunt. The one that's just awesome, and she blows into town, and she's got stories, and she's vivacious, and she's got intelligence and beauty, and she's just a total package, right? Everyone needs one of those aunts. And we are so fortunate in our community that we've got we've got the number one best auntie of all time. And she will always have gum for all of us. So ladies and gentlemen, may I please, please have you stand, cheer, shout out for the one and only, the gender outlaw, Kate Bornstein.
Presenting her to my family, her family that hasn't gotten to know her as well as you've gotten to know me. And everything that Gina was saying about me is how I feel about Sandy Stone. When I was first starting to come out in the 80s, I was reading about Sandy, the first female sound engineer at Olivia Records. And this was the all-women's, pretty much all-lesbian record company that was starting up way back then. And Sandy knew it would be a problem if they had a trans woman on as their only sound engineer. But there weren't highly trained women sound engineers. So she said, well, I will join on the condition that you bring on two apprentices that I can train underneath me. She went on to that. She's the target of America's first trans-exclusive radical feminist, Janice Raymond, who dragged Sandy through the mud in a book called The Transsexual Empire. And that was really hard. That was really hard. And so Sandy went sort of underground at that point. Went to graduate school. Got degrees, higher degrees in all kinds of forms of postmodern theory and communication. And 10 years, I think it was about 10 years, you can correct me, Ms. Stone, came out in response to the Transsexual Empire. She wrote The Empire Strikes Back. Welcome, please, my mentor and great love, Sandy Stone.
Thank you.
stone. What I didn't mention in this introduction was who else you were sound engineer for. And names just seemed to drop out of the air. Jimi Hendrix, Velvet Underground, Ultraviolet. You were right there. Can you have any fun stories of those days?
That's about East Coast. That included Todd Rundgren and Johnny Winter. There's quite a list. And then on the West Coast, when I came out here, see Airplane and the Dead and a bunch of other people as well. But none of those people had one single engineer. They had several engineers. I was one of them. So you're waiting for me to say something else.
I'm waiting for a story if you've got one. Well, we can just move on to the next area.
All right. Jimi Hendrix stories.
Please.
Jimmy. Well, there's the story that everybody wants to hear, and then there are the real ones. And the real ones are not necessarily pretty, because Jimmy was a person, and he was caught up in a whirlwind of publicity that he did not anticipate. And that kind of publicity, particularly in England and in the United States, gets you a large coterie of followers. And Jimmy had an entourage. And it wasn't an entourage in order, but they followed him around everywhere. And it happened that I knew him. And we were working in the studio one day, and it was a large crowd of people in a control room, right? 20, maybe 30. So that's a lot. When you run around for 2 or 3, and we had 25, 30. Something like that. And they were all paid. And they were doing cocaine at the console and so forth. And Jimmy was out in the studio trying to work. And the person who was his girlfriend at the time, I was looking dour. Because all these people were creating confusion in the control room. And Jimmy was picking up on that. He was not working well. So his girlfriend of the time said, looked at me and realized I was being negative. And she said, "Do you want to keep your job?" And I looked straight through the control room window at Jimmy and said, "No." And that had the effect of stopping everybody dead in their tracks. Somebody had done something not conducive to good vibes around Jimmy. And they didn't know what to do after that. And I went out in the studio. I opened the studio door. We had lead in the studio door to absorb the sound. And when I opened the door, Jimmy was playing like this with his back to his Marshall stack, which came up to about there on him. A Marshall stack is a stack of guitar amplifiers, and they're very, very loud. They were so loud that when you open the door, it was like releasing a flood of water, and you had to swim into the studio. It was like pushing your way through butter. The sound was palpable. You could feel it. And I got over to him, and I said, "I need the microphone out of the way." I said, "Jimmy, would you like me to throw all these people out of the control room?" And he looked in there, and he looked at me, and he said, "They're my friends." And I said, "No, they're not." And he said, "No, they're not." And we kind of went on from there and things like that. You've pretty much always been able to tell it straight. And again, straight. You've been a straight shooter. You haven't minced words. You're a brilliant communicator. When Janice Raymond came after you and said that Olivia Records shouldn't have hired you, and you're a man, what's a man doing there, and this is typical
man burrowing into lesbian space to take advantage.
What? I'm a burrower.
Straight shooting burrower. Because now we've got trans-excluding radical feminists, and they're surfacing again. Do you have any advice for folks, like when the TERFs come after them?
What is it like to be a male in a robot zombie program to destroy femininity?
There you go.
Okay. First of all, I should mention that, to go back to the beginning of this, Raymond's attack was not accidental. She actually planned it in stages. And her first stage failed because she didn't realize that when I agreed to work with the collective, I had told them I was trans. And they said, well, we're glad you told us. But in fact, we already knew. Someone in San Francisco had already told them. We hadn't started to work together yet. So all the way along the line, they knew that I was trans, but Janice Raymond didn't know. So she first sent the collective a letter with the first chapter of, not the first chapter, but the pages that would become the chapter of the book in which she tried to poke at me. And she sent it to the collective. We opened all our mail as a group. And so that got opened as a group and passed around, as it always is at meetings. Everybody read it. And then we passed around a comment sheet for everyone to write comments on it. This is what you did with everything. And people wrote things on it like, who is this nutcase? what has she got? What business does she have thinking she knows anything about our collective? And on and on and on like that. And one person tellingly wrote, what this appears to be about is some sort of mass extermination. If what they're talking about with regard to trans is sending people to the ovens, then why don't they just come out and say that? So that was our first indication of what would become TERFs later. And then there was, and we sent it back to her with the comments. My comment on that sheet, I commented like anybody else did. And my comment was, we need a book about this topic, but this is not that book. And we sent that back to her in an envelope with a nice cover letter. You know, dear Miss Raymond, we appreciate your submission. And then the book came out later. And she had apparently been enraged by the fact that this didn't blow my cover. I didn't have a cover, so there was no way to blow it.
Ow.
Now, I'm being old and essentially absent-minded, I forgot the question.
Advice for dealing with trans-excluding radical feminists, because they're surfacing again.
Okay. I would like to be able to say that sweet reason will turn them around. But after years of experience with this, I can tell you unequivocally that it won't. So what do you do about them? You either ignore them, or you go off and organize against them, or you try to no-platform them. No-platform them.
What is that?
Well, that's a kind of a radical thing. I don't know if I recommend that myself, but other people do. It means you deny them a platform from which to speak.
Oh.
Such as boycotting their talks when they come to a university to give a speech. Groups have boycotted them. I usually don't approve of that because I think the more voices in these things, the better. But I am not in favor of hate speech. And what they're bringing to the table is not debate. It is hate speech. And I don't particularly want that in my backyard. And so I'm on the side of the no platformers for that, for people like Raymond.
Thank you.
So we figured we would go back and forth and ask each other questions here. So I'm going to open myself up to you, Miss Thing.
Well, I should tell you, the secret lives of Kate and Sandy. Part one. We were originally going to do a song and dance act for you. But a number of things went wrong with that. Number one was Kate got stage fright. That's legitimate. Number two was I broke my foot, so I couldn't do the dance. And you'll notice I'm hoarse tonight. I've got some kind of allergy. I don't know what it is. So I can't hit the high notes. So we need to hit more to be able to do the song. So you're spared from that tonight. I do want to say a couple of things. One of the things that I'm wondering about is, what do we do about the aging trans population? I mean, so far, all the people you saw in the video, and it's quite understandable, because it's all the people I ever see in any videos, anywhere, are younger middle-aged. There aren't any old transies. And you'll notice I use that word. We can talk about that. I want to talk about that. I grew up with that word. There aren't any old people in our culture. They're completely invisible, whether they are trans or cis or white or black or people of color or anything in between. They are invisible. I have a friend who's an anthropologist who says that when you hit 45, you get picked up by a huge crane and you get deposited in a huge hole in the ground in Iowa. And you get to stay there until you turn 80, and then you can come back as a wise old crone if you survive that. But what happens to you in the meantime? So here I am. I consider myself an old woman, and I'm an old trans woman. Or maybe these days I would be considered a genderqueer woman rather than full-on transgender. I can't figure this out. I can't figure anything out right now. I mean, I wound up, I started out as a guy, right? I was a nice Jewish boy from New York, like Kate. And I became a lesbian separatist. And I wound up in a heterosexual marriage with a wonderful guy, and I got a kid and a grandkid. So where is that? What do we do now? And you're all going to go through this in one way or another, hopefully. I mean, if we have our way, you are going to go through this, because our game is to wreck the boundaries and open up the possibilities. So you may find yourself... You may find yourself on this torturous road because it's fun. Let me tell you a secret. You're going to like it. And you may be having a shit time now. But if you survive, you will discover that you like it.
I've been advising, imploring, entreating people to stay alive here for quite some time. And I have to echo what Sandy said. You get to this point, I'm 67, and I've been through 2 years of chemo and radiation, and I've now spent a year completely cancer-free. But here's the deal. It was worth staying alive to be an old fart.
Yes.
Right? It really is. You're going to hear, oh, you know, being old is not for sissies. Yes, it is. I know some wonderful old sissies. Just terrific. I do. I echo Sandy's thing. Please stay alive for this. There aren't many of our contemporaries around from the trans world or even from LGBT world, LGB, whatever, because of the plague.
got the names and what killed so many of our folks. The folks who would have been out and about and ready to talk with everybody. They're not here. You are. Stay alive. It's going to be such a game changer when y'all get into your 60s and 70s. That's going to be a major hoot. Now, about that word. You say transy.
I say tranny.
You say transy.
I say tranny.
Transy. Let's call the whole thing off. You got me to do it. Trump you. Well, hot damn in the cage. So all right. I want to situate the word tranny because I've identified as a tranny pretty much since I came out back in San Francisco in the late 80s. Tranny is a word started in Sydney, Australia in the 70s. It came about because there were transsexuals, there were transvestites who called themselves cross-dressers, and there were drag queens. And they had the infighting, you know, drag queens are better than anybody. No, transsexuals are better than anybody. No. And everybody dumped on the cross-dressers. But and
cross-dressers, please stand up for a minute.
Yeah? Ha-ha! Thank you, dear. But ultimately they realized, you know, this was family. This was family. Transsexuals, transvestites, drag queens. It was all family at that point. And so they came up with the word tranny. And they said, hey, we're all trannies in this thing together. And it was a word that was used to unify. It was a word that said dear. It was a dear, dear word. That word came over to San Francisco in the mid-80s with Doris Fish. Doris Fish in San Francisco was my drag mom when I got there. She was the premier drag queen of the city. And she brought the word over. We started using it. At that point, Lou Sullivan was there. Lou was one of the very, very first, what we call female-to-male trans folks. And Jameson Green, the early trans guys, they called themselves trannies. We called them trannies. The drag queens were trannies. The cross-dressers were trannies. We formed family around that word. And then the word got into sex. It got into sex workers who were calling themselves trannies and she-males and chicks with dicks. And we all love that shit. And then got into tranny porn. We all love that shit. I still have a small collection of it. Good stuff. And that's where I think the problem started, because people who were reading tranny porn or watching it or working with tranny sex workers hated themselves for doing that. And they turned the word into a hatred. And I hear that, oh, how brave it is to reclaim that word. We're not reclaiming it. It was always our word. And I just want to make that very, very clear. It's a word that started with love. Now, okay. I know the word upsets a lot of people. I know. It's not just a small number of people. And it triggers some people. There's a big difference between being upset and being triggered. I live with borderline personality disorder. Everything triggers me. Everything. My whole fucking therapy was learning how to untrigger myself. Right? And so to the people who are worried about tranny triggering people, I say, may it be the worst trigger you ever have. It's not a bad thing when tranny is said with love.
That's just, I wanted to make that clear, that point. Okay?
Is that clear?
What do we got here next? Monster metaphors.
Monster metaphors.
There have been all kinds of monster metaphors for trans folk. Susan Stryker compared us to Frankenstein. And I get that, you know, we are. We're bits and pieces sewn together, and hopefully no bad rumors. I've always compared us to shapeshifters, you know, that kind of a monster. And then the names use one of us. And you picked vampire. Explain.
Thank you for lobbing that bunch of shit right in my lap.
My training talk went over so well, I just wanted to do that.
I particularly liked the metaphor of the vampire because, first of all, I was reading Anne Rice at the time. She was a very interesting person in her own right. And she was writing about Lestat, who was a very complicated person. And Lestat, you may recall, first of all, was in a problematic position. His problematic position interested me. He was outside of time. And he looked into time at mortals, at transients, people who lived a short while and then died. And he could bite them. And by biting them, by exchanging blood, he gave them eternal life. He took them out of time. Now, there you have an interesting metaphor. You have, instead of having, well, all right, let's not go there. Let's go here. You've got humans who are fixed in place. Our society tries to fix us in place in a number of different ways. Because society works naturally to try to fix you in place. I had a technical term for that, but that's of no consequence here. It happens in a lot of different ways. It happens by databases that record your social security number, your address, your telephone number, your height, your weight, your skin color, your name. All of those things are ways of fixing you in place. They make sure that the government knows who you are and, more importantly, where you are. Well, those are ways of fixing you in place in space. You have a fixed address. You have a fixed body. But you're also fixed in place in time, in that you go from day zero to day N, whatever it is, at which point you die, and that's the end of it. That's how you're fixed in time. Now here's this guy with the teeth. He has the power to free you from that, to free you from being transfixed by the arrow of time, and to take you into this world of infinite possibility, infinite life. So what about the trans vampire? The person who bites you and infects you with the power to move, not through time, but through person, through space, through being, through identity, in different ways. And the nice thing about the vampire is that the vampire is also about infection. It's about dirt. It's about mixing. Mixing is something that our society abhors. Everything has to be very clear, very defined, very different. And what my vampire wants to do is knock the props out from under that, to destroy that virally through infecting you, through bringing you that dirt, that filth, that slime that goes with no boundaries. It's a metaphor, slime and dirt. It's a metaphor for the way we go out in the world and try to change society by ending those boundaries, by making space for difference, and not just this kind of difference, but this kind of difference,
smooth difference when you can flow from one thing to another, from one identity or one episteme to another. When you can bring up some interesting, brilliant, exciting, new way of being and put it on like a skin and wear it for the day and then take it off and hang it in a closet and pick out another one and put that one on. That's what my vampire is all about. He's about that kind of change. He's about nastiness and dirtiness. And he's about being outside of time and identity. I can't take you outside of time, but I sure as hell can take you outside of identity. And so can you to anyone around you. That's what the vampire is about. Thank you.
Something. We have questions here. Did you have any for me? Andy, you said you were going to ask me questions. Or you're not going to answer.
I will. At the right time. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, this is the right time.
You think this is iced tea I'm drinking, don't you?
No.
Here's, we've got some questions here. Can you talk about your view on third gender pronouns? Want to take that, or you want me to start with that?
Why don't you start with that, and I'll jump in.
Third gender pronouns, or non-gender specific pronouns, have been in use for a very long time. Back in the 1600s in English, they was third person singular and plural. And I like using that one now. When I didn't know that back in the 90s, and started writing my first book, Gender Outlaw, and started talking about, call me Z in here, because I just wanted to make trouble. Really?
Go out and buy the book.
But back then, there was the ARPANET was getting rolling, and the internet had just started up, and people were playing games in massive multiplayer dungeons with non-gendered characters. And so they had to come up with non-gender-free pronouns. And there was, floating around the internet, there was like a 40-page file of gender-free pronouns. It's not something unique to trans, but there's always a crossover, I think, between trans and geek. Something there. The cathode ray tube did it to us all. So I like they. Now,
I'll go with they. I've been around on just about every other pronoun there is. We've tried to use them. None of them have stuck, really. And it's very hard to introduce a new term into the language and get it to stick. But they works well enough, and we can change the meaning of the day sufficiently to make it work for the singular as well.
I heard a 12-year-old trans, a genderqueer youth explain it, that they were getting queries, well, no, we can't use they. They is plural. The they is always plural. And this young genderqueer person said, no, let me explain it to you. They. I am a boy. That's one. And I am a girl. That's two. They. You know, so we see, I'm seeing now trans happening at both ends. You were talking earlier about, you know, elderly, and I'm seeing it happening now very, very young. And I just couldn't be more thrilled. What about you?
Well, the nice thing about people who transition very young, like 5, 6, that ones, is that it gives the lie very easily to the idea of the elderly men
you know, transitional women. Let me do it this way. There's a turf thing about a trans woman is really a person who's been socialized as a male and therefore can never have female experience. All right. If you transition at the age of 5, the odds are you haven't had very much socializing experience as a male. And those people are problems for the folks who make that argument. That's all. That was my comment on that.
That's fucking brilliant.
No, it is. You're so fucking smart. You are. And I'm sapiosexual.
Sapiosexual?
I know, yeah.
Can I get on that train?
You can. I want to lick your brain.
I rebuild the machine.
My new creation.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
No.
We could have a night of that, you know. Okay. Next question. Someone says, I like this. This is the best day of my life. How do you feel? Hey, that's just fun. Thank you very much. I like that. Okay. How about you? How do you feel?
I feel capital. And for those of you who have seen the movie, now rip out my 6 guns and squeeze off a few rounds.
So wacky.
See why we wanted to do this?
Okay.
The question from a woman in the balcony, Doctor, is this the transgender problem? No. Two doors down tomorrow. Next question. Oh, you want me to get it? All right, I'll get it. Within our battles for medical coverage of transgender surgeries, why so much emphasis on bottom surgery? In this society of being judged based upon appearance, facial feminization should be considered a priority, with breast augmentation a close second, especially for those of us who are celibate. The trouble with that last part, that's a very good question, but it isn't a question, it's a statement. But let's deal with it anyway, because it's a good question. And I apologize for reading it in that way. When I was getting going in the trans business, all of the emphasis was on bottom surgery. They didn't even have much top surgery at that time. Well, they did, but you had to work very hard to find it. And the reason for that was the cultural emphasis on it. It had nothing to do with whether I thought that bottom surgery or top surgery was a good idea or necessary. It had to do with the cultural expectations, and they change with time. So I think we can change our way out of it. I mean, the doctors who were in a position to give us that surgery thought it was the only way to achieve genderism, and in the whole purpose, everything, all arrows pointed, if you are male to female, all arrows pointed to bottom surgery. That was the moment of transition. And if you go and you do your homework, you look at the literature of the time, you find that very clearly in the writing, that moment, the moment at which you have bottom surgery, is the moment of transition. And that was a very binary thing. That now you're male. Boing! Or rather, ouch! Now you're female. And we know now that that's not true at all. And that what you have between your legs has very little or nothing to do with who you are, how you behave.
I think this is one of the extremely positive things that's happening as a result of this transgender tipping point that we heard about a year ago. And it's true. At first, I didn't believe that. I went, no, not really, because there's so many people for whom there's no tipping point. But when I understood how transgender had been redefined and is currently being used as the difference to the way we were back in the 80s and 90s, we thought it was an umbrella term. Anyone fucking with gender was transgender. That's not how it is now. Transgender is now pretty much a word that has replaced transsexual. But the great thing about it is that it includes, we used to call it pre-op and post-op transsexuals or non-op transsexuals. No, transgender just means someone who's was assigned one gender at birth and is now living their lives the other gender, the other of two genders. And that's pretty much
phone off.
You're good. I was being involved.
Will you come up here and take the call, please? I'm not.
So now we've got the umbrella term is trans, but the great, great thing is that, no, it's not, it doesn't have to do with genitalia anymore. So yeah, that could change. That could change the focus, I hope it does, on bottom surgery. Although, I would imagine there's always going to be people who want bottom surgery. I sure wanted it, and I'm sure glad I had it.
I'm glad you had it too.
Thank you.
See you later.
I keep saying that. We gotta do that before we die.
And we'll charge admission for it.
Of course. Straight.
The idea of genitalia and the importance of genitalia in that binary moment of transition, that's put upon us by the society in which we live. That's something that we learn from birth. And there are reasons behind it. And it's not just because God said whatever the hell God said. It has to do literally with the fears of old white guys. It may have to do with the fears of old guys of color, too. But it mainly has to do with the fears of old white guys who would much rather... And I'm going to be blunt about this. There are a lot of old white guys who would much rather be fucking six-year-olds, fucking young kids, and who are so terrified of ever having that thought come up in their minds that they will do all sorts of things to you to keep that sort of thing from ever coming up in the world, even epistemically, even in terms of thoughts or societal means. They're afraid of themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're afraid of their own urges and the power of those urges. And out of that framework comes an entire body of law and a hegemony that affects all of us.
What does hegemony mean? Please, really, because I can't get
it. It has to do with bushes. And
hegemony is essentially a control, but it's invisible control. Hegemony are those represent means, those forces which control you that are forever invisible and impalpable to you. My favorite example is not the right one, but it's the panopticon. Does anybody here know what that is? Panopticon. You build a prison which consists of open rooms that are built around the guard tower in the middle, and the guard tower has one-way window, one-way mirrors around it. So the guard can see out, but you can't see in. You're always being watched. You can always be watched by the guard in the guard tower. No matter what you do or where you are, the guard can always see you, and you can never see the guard now. You have no way of knowing whether there's a guard in the guard tower or not, because you can't see them. For all you know, there's no guard there. That's hegemony. When you act as if something was going on, whether it's going on or not. Okay? And we act as if there was a certain law in place for gender, a certain law in place for behavior. In some cases, that is what makes society go. In other cases, it's what keeps us in our place. And it's important to tease out the threads to discern for yourself, to determine for yourself which one is one that helps society function and which one just serves to keep you in your place.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's all remember that now. Thank you very much. Okay, you have a drink. I'll have a drink. You think that's water in a glass, don't you? I haven't had a drink for almost 40 years now.
Wow.
Oh, no. I do plenty of drugs. I just don't do alcohol. Make that clear. Clean that I am. Ooh. Yeah, that's a good one. That's why I passed it over there. What was one of the most significant turning points in your own journey to self-acceptance? Getting the fuck out of Scientology. Alright, Scientology is so weird. Well, you know that. You live in the heart of Scientology land. That's what this is here. But they believe that you do not have a soul. You are a soul. And they call that soul a Thetan, an immortal spiritual being that has nothing to do with matter, energy, space, or time. And these immortal spiritual beings have no gender. How could they have a gender? Right? And I thought, oh, yes, it's exactly what I am. And no, because they turn that around and then say, yes, but no gays, no lesbians, no perversions. I go, wait, what? What the fuck are you talking about? And it's that kind of cognitive dissonance happens over and over again in Scientology. When I got out, it took me years until I could realize I didn't need another person's rules, laws, or answers by which to live. I could discover my own. That took years, but that was a big step in my journey to self-acceptance. Yes.
You're waiting for me to...
You fucking right out of here.
But I have to do this in my own way.
You could ask your own question.
What was one of the most significant turning points in your own journey? The self-acceptance, the most significant point in my journey to self-acceptance was Bainey. Bainey the butcher. Never mind. No, it was actually, I came out, I protected myself against losing my job in transition by opening my own business. And I didn't have any money, but I found I scraped up $250, which was the first month's rent on the store. And I did something which was ridiculously easy for me to do. We opened a stereo repair shop. I figured it would tide me over during transition. And I came out of this joint one day, and this was right after Reagan had closed the mental hospitals here in California. And all the folks who had been in those mental hospitals were now out on the street. And Santa Cruz is a great place to be if you want to be out on the street. The climate, perfect Mediterranean. There we were. And Adam was sitting on the stoop in front of my store was a young psycho. I'm using that term specifically. Because certain kinds of psychotics and schizophrenics are very, very sensitive to other people, and they can frequently tell what you're thinking about, or they can tell you deep things about you just by looking at you, by being near you. This kid looked up at me and he said, "Holy fuck, what the hell are you? You hurt my head, man." You know, I was wearing a jean skirt and a leotard top. And you know, I had hair down here. I had much better hair then than I have now. And I looked at, here we were, and there's this confrontation in public with this guy going, "You hurt my head, man. What the hell are you?" And, you know, you've got 1 second, you know, your whole life passes before your eyes. And I said, quote, "Find out." That has since then become my stock answer to somebody who does something like that. You know, "What the hell are you? Come on, find out." And in that moment, when I stood there with that guy, I realized, holy shit, who the hell am I? And then I realized that the journey that I was on, this grand adventure, was only part of where the hell I was going. I mean, I thought at the time I was doing it, oh my God, this is the most important thing in the universe. I've got to get through this. But that's because you need the energy to be able to pull yourself through it. Then after you pull yourself through it, you say, oh my God, I've finally done it. I've finally become myself. My life's journey is over. And that lasts about a minute and a half. Keep an eye on your watch. And then I thought, okay, what's next? Well, next was, I went back to university and got a doctorate. And then after that it was, oh God, it was so hard. And I wrote this dissertation. I went through all this crap, this ridiculous shit. I got my doctorate. Oh, my life is complete. No, it isn't. So then I had to go on and become an artist. You know, yada, yada, every one of those is another stop on the circus train. But the circus train keeps going. And your circus train doesn't end as long as you're alive. There are always more things coming down the track. There are new stops, more stuff you want. Holy shit. Now I love chocolate. More than anything else in the world. You know, and then when I got the chocolate, I look around. From the pinnacle of chocolativity, I look around and I realize that, no, it's not. Having chocolate is not the end of the universe. There's more out there. And so it goes on. And that's my answer to that. That's all. You want to take that one? You want me to take it?
Do you think the end of Michigan Women's Music Festival will bring about a positive change for trans women and trans feminists? 1, 2, 3. No! No. You know, ending any particular form of hatred is not going to stop hatred. This is why policing words isn't going to stop the hate. Let's say tranny does succeed in becoming, you know, terribly can't say it. There's always going to be words that are going to be filled with hate. It's the hate that we have to target. Michigan Women's Music Festival. Go do it. I never wanted to spend a week in the mud with bugs. I just did not. That was not my thing. I never personally needed that space to affirm me being a woman. There was a time when I needed affirmation for being a woman, and that lasted about 6 months post my surgery, my bottom surgery. But I realized that to the point where I needed a group of people to say, yes, you're one of us, then there was some flaw in me if I simply just couldn't say, yeah, I am. And what I discovered the flaw in me to be was, no, I'm not a woman. Thought I was, but I think that was based mostly on my rock-solid understanding that I'm not a man. So I must be a woman, and so I went into the must be a woman, must be a woman, must be a woman. I am a woman, and then, no, I'm not. And that was dark night of the soul for me. That was terrible. Did you ever have anything like that? Like, where you thought you really got to the real you, and then, nah, not really.
No, I think my students did.
Talk to me.
This may be an anticlimax after what you're saying. One of the courses that I taught in Austin when I was teaching there was a course about identity and about the fungibility of identity. And
about what of identity?
Fungibility, the changeability of identity, and about how we all perform different identities at different times of day, depending upon where we are and what we're doing. You know, we perform customer, then we perform client, we perform therapist, we perform male person, M-A-I-L. Perform a male person. Whatever job, whatever societal role we're taking at the time, we're performing that. And that was what the course was about. And one night, I was at home, and it was something like 3 a.m, and I went to the refrigerator, and there was that much milk in the bottle. And I was just, ah, shit. I gotta have milk. And across the I was staying at that time temporarily in student housing. My home was being remodeled. And across the street was a 7-Eleven. There's always a 7-Eleven across from student housing in Austin, Texas. And I went over there at 3 a.m. in my pajamas to there's this glare of the floodlights and, the moths and mosquitoes are going in the lights. I go in there, and I go to the cooler, and I get the milk. all I can think of is, oh God, fuck, I want to go home and drink this shit. And one of my students comes down the aisle and looks at me and says, Professor Stone, who are you performing right now? I was tired. I said, I'm not performing anybody or anything right now. I just want to get the fucking milk and go home. Thank you.
I'm being signaled that we're starting to run out of time. I was told 9 o'clock, and then I was told maybe 9:15. John, which are we saying it's going to be?
9:15.
Yeah. Okay. So we have about 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes left. I know one thing I wanted to say. Coming out of chemo and radiation, I didn't know that I'd be alive. I didn't know that it would work, and that it would work for any longer than 3 months at a time. And so now here I am, and I'm an elder in this community, and I've been trying to figure out, what's my fucking job now as an elder? And the best I can come up with is basically how Gina introduced me. I want to be your auntie. I want to be your granny. I want to dote on you. I want to encourage you. I want to give you context when you need it or ask for it. And mostly I want to say, please stay alive. Please stay alive. And the way you do this is you do whatever it takes to make your life more worth living. Anything. We're told that sex and gender exploration is not allowed, is bad, is evil, is perverted. Yes, of course it is. And that's why we love it so. But do that shit. Do it, do it, do it. And when you get to a point where, like Sandy was saying, ah, I've arrived. Now I'm a professor, but that's not enough. It's going to happen probably in your exploration of sex and gender. We're going to go, oh, now I've arrived. I am a woman. And, you know, you might want to look again. You might want to look at, okay, what kind of woman? You might want to look at, okay, now what do I do as a woman? You want to take it further than simply identity. Please, do whatever it takes to make your life more worth living. There's only one rule you really need to follow in order to make a blanket commission out of it. And that's be mean. And this is important to say. Most of us have been threatened with hell. And what we're doing with our lives, with our sexuality, and with our gender is pretty much guaranteed to end us up in hell. It is. And you know, I know, oh yes, all the fun people will be in hell. No. They will be, but they're all going to be at the end of pitchforks or have their guts splayed out over barbecues. It's not going to be fun. No. The martinis... What do you do about that? And I, the only thing I could come up with, everybody on the way out of here will be, you'll see nice usher types handing out little cards. Everybody's going to get a get out of hell free card. Right? And it will work. It's not just, get out of hell free. Here's how it works. You do whatever it takes to make your life more worth living. Please. Anything, my children. Anything, anything, anything. Just don't be mean.
And if you get sent to hell for doing something that made your life more worth living, and it wasn't mean, and you're there, you are in hell, fucking, okay, thanks a lot. No. Hang on to the card, give it to Satan. I will do your time for you. It's a deal I made with the devil. For real. Okay.
The letter that Olivia Records wrote to respond to transphobic feminists talks about shared commitment to radical politics. Not just feminism, but anti-racism and anti-capitalism as the basis for trans women and non-trans women working together. While relations between trans and non-trans women have greatly improved, most political work today is not nearly as radical as that of the 1970s. Do you think it is possible to revive the radicalism of that time?
Fuck yes!
All it takes is you. It takes me too. It takes us to be that radical again, to make that kind of noise, to stir up that shit. It takes a lot of work, and we're being deliberately discouraged by our culture against doing it. So far, the attempts to discourage us have been very successful, but we can damn well fight against it. And we can, and we will.
If a man becomes transgendered to female and wears dresses, can he/she perform as a top while wearing a dress and high heels? Oh, yes. Yes, I know many. Okay.
If a man becometh transgender and weareth his mother's drapes.
Top, bottom, these are all optional. Yes, of course. Yes, you can, baby. Do it. See me afterwards. Let me take your number. I'm very interested in that. High heels and dresses. A couple of them in the front row right here.
All right, later, you mad fool. Okay, there's one addressed to me. Should I grab that? Have you kept in contact with any of your former colleagues? Have you kept in contact with any of your former colleagues at Olivia Records? Yes. Let's go on.
Yeah, man, that's an ongoing thing.
My contact, my relationship with my sisters in the Olivia Collective was a very personal as well as very professional thing. And it's really our business. It's some of it is quite personal. I honor them and I love every one of them. And yes, I'm still in contact with some of them. And they have gone on to give up the record business, which there wasn't much money, and become a travel agency and put on cruises for women, in which there is a great deal of money. And they're much happier for it. That's it.
No questions of your own?
There are no questions of my own. Boy, am I unprepared for that.
In fact, you wanted to ask him, so I'm just giving you the opportunity. What brought you to be an activist many years ago? Ha!
I don't call myself an activist. I call myself an artist in service to activism. I don't think I've got the kind of courage, the smarts, to be an activist. I equivocate. I'm a Pisces. I say, well, on one hand, the other hand. So I'm not that good at it. Let's go! No, let's go maybe this way, too. So I've never really seen myself as an activist. I'm good at, like, you know, licking envelopes, addressing envelopes, marching, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. Do you consider yourself an activist?
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm among a lot of other things.
Yeah.
I'm an activist, but I'm an activist because I have to be. Because that's the only way I'm going to get where I want to go. It's just by actively encouraging other people to do certain things.
Is that activism?
Well, for me, that's activism and helping people who need help. Being available, trying to heal people who need healing, trying to make signs for the people who need signs. See, we've learned something tonight.
How do you react to negative looks and statements?
That caves me right in. You know, someone gives me a stink eye. Someone goes, hey, you fucking tranny. Using it as a hate word. Hey, look, it's a man.
It gets easier the less I'm attached to things. Especially like, hey, you fucking tranny. It's like, yeah, what? it gets easier. Keep yourself safe, whoever asked this question. Keep yourself out of harm's way, please. Remember, I love you at moments like that. Go, wait a minute, Anket says, she loves me. And breathe and keep walking.
We love you.
Yeah. Why are transgenders killed just for being themselves? Good question.
Well, could I give a theological answer to that one? Because evil exists in the world. I'm not going to end on that.
Why did the chicken cross the road?
Holy shit. That was no chicken, that was my wife.
How has the influence of trans, exclusive radical feminists changed since the 70s, particularly in regards to men? Oh, we did that one, right?
But we can do it again. I have a completely different answer. Gotta be versatile up here.
Go be versatile.
While Kate is looking for a new question, she has a number of books out. And I strongly advise, urge, threaten, and otherwise cajole
you to get those books and read every one of them. Gender Outlaw. Hello, Cruel World. Kate Bornstein is a Queer and Pleasant Danger.
Woo!
My Gender Workbook. Did I leave that out?
My New Gender Workbook. There's a new version of it. Just came out about a year ago. I'm working on a new book. And can I tell? I'm interested to see what you think of the title. Can I tell you?
Yes.
Go on, do it.
Nah, they're not interested. I'm gonna call it Trans, just for the fun of it. Know how many transgender activists it takes to screw in a light bulb? That's not funny.
Okay, well, yes, do you remember that time when I'm starting to remember how we met? You know, the earliest, I know we met in front of that Harley Davidson, but in the constructed version of how we met, it was when you told your story about the giant green. That, I'll let you tell it. I mean, you have to tell it. It's your story. But that story defines what we're doing.
My dad took me to the circus. I was maybe 7 or 8. And this was at Madison Square Garden in New York. And my favorite part was the sideshow. And my favorite person in the sideshow was the giant. His name was Olaf, the world's tallest man. And he was so tall. And I, little kid, looking way up. And he was selling rings from his fingers. For a whole dollar, you could get a ring that Olaf had worn. And I was looking up at him and looking up at him. And at one point, he bends down and he looks down at me. And he looks lovingly. He takes a ring off of one of his fingers. And he reaches down and puts it around my wrist. And I look at that. And that's when I knew. That's when I knew I was a freak. And that I'd have freaky family. Yeah. That's that moment of identification. When you realize who you are, whatever that is, when you realize you're a freak. I had a moment very much like that after Kate told me about her moment of discovery. You know, and in that way, we're all freaks. We're all together in that. We're all together with our freakish identities, our terrible identities. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, the more freakish we are, the more we are ourselves. And the more terrible our identities, the more in touch with our own power, the power that comes from the center of yourself, the more in touch with that power we are. And the more we can use that power as a force for change. But the first step is recognizing our own difference, recognizing that we are freaks, that we are people, that we are whoever we are, each of us. It's a strange and terrible identity. And
and it's ours, and it's gorgeous, and it's powerful. And if there's a message that I want you to take away from tonight, it's that. And people try to tell you you're not. They try to tell you you're nuts. Or they try to call you out. In whatever ways they do, what they're really doing is acknowledging your power. Acknowledging your specialness. And your job is to grow into that and be the best possible freak that you can. We've been trying for years. We're a little ahead of you. But we're waiting for you to catch up. And when you get there, we're waiting for you. You know, years. Years ago, I wrote a science fiction novel, which has never actually come out. It was bought, but we fought over rewriting it, and I chose to take it back. It was a novel about the 70s, about lesbian separatism, and about a war that went on, and about five women who got together and formed a power group in order to invent a new language and using that language to change the world. That language survived that time, although virtually nothing else did. And it was that way, the language was a way of calling out to others who could hear. Who could hear that the echo of that strangeness in themselves. It's a long, weird story as to how they created that language. But this really happened. It was real. Blood real. Bone real. As real as you're sitting here tonight. They did that. And the language was a way of bringing people together. And at the end of tonight, I want to say something in that because it speaks to this, what we're doing. Are we out of time? Maybe it's time to do that.
I want to say on top of what you just said, and I think that's where I would, what you're talking about in terms of embracing your freakiness, step up, age into your freakiness, age beyond your freakiness into another whole kind of freakiness, that's what I would call trans pride. And that's what I think I would like to see everybody walking out feeling proud to be unique. Please. Feeling proud of your family. Your trans family. Everybody who's fucking with gender is family. Alright? If you're embarrassed by some of us, realize that some of us are embarrassed by you. Have a great trans pride. Thank you, LGBT Center, for bringing us here. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sandy Stone and Kate Borenstein. Before everyone heads off, you have witnessed a bit of history here this evening because this is the first time that these two amazing people have ever shared a stage despite their long-standing friendship. So you are very special people this evening. Everyone, don't forget, we've got a wonderful reception and gallery opening going on over in the courtyard area right after this. And don't forget, tomorrow, all day, we've got the festival portion of Trans Pride. We'll open the doors at noon. We will go till 9:30. We've got a fabulous variety show for you tomorrow. It's going to be wonderful. We've got Alexandra Billings. We've got our Lady J, who's here this evening. D-Lo, Ian Harvey. We've got a very special surprise closing number that we're not going to say too much about. It's a guest. It's a very special guest. So you got to come to see what's going on. Get here early. It's going to be packed, just like tonight. Raffle prizes all day long. We're going to have a lot of amazing things to give away. And don't forget, you want a chance to be on Transparent?
Woo!
All right, well, then come tomorrow. We're going to have a booth to do open casting call, headshots, fill out your applications, and then who knows, you could be a star. So once again, our thanks to Kate and Sandy. They will come in and join us over for the reception. We're going to have a fabulous time. Thank you so much for being here, and we will see you all tomorrow.